Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, February the 20th. And today we're going to talk about Obamacare. We're going to be chatting with our good friend, Dr. Ileana Johnson. She's an author, she's a blogger, and she's also an economist. And over the last few years, we had talked a great deal about Obamacare. And I think we're now reaching a point in the timeline where Obamacare may actually be repealed here in the next 3 to 6 months, maybe sooner, hopefully sooner. But I think there is a very good chance that it will be repealed and replaced. So we got to start thinking about some options. I understand Republicans in the House have been looking at different options. And I've got a couple of ideas. Our friend Dr. Ileana has a couple of ideas of her own. And we're going to try to come together and chat a little bit about putting an end, finally putting an end to this miserable disaster called Obamacare. I think calling it a miserable disaster may be charitable because this thing is a mess. It's a mess. And I like one thing that President Trump has been saying lately. You know, if we do nothing, it'll fall apart. And if you look at these exchanges and you look at the premiums and you look at the last enrollment where nobody signed up, it is indeed falling apart. Let's say hello to our good friend, Dr. Ileana Johnson. How are you?
Hello, Silvio. I'm fine. Thank you for having me again.
It's always a great pleasure. And how are the books? Tell me about the books.
Well, the books are selling, and of course, my fifth book is coming out soon. It's been in the making since last year. It's a travel book, but I pretty much have dedicated my time a lot to just writing articles about the current situation in our country, and also in the non-writing venue, of course, taking care of my hubby.
Right, and you have a grandchildren too. I think the last time we spoke, you were
absolutely
really excited about your grandson, and I know that.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll write a book about him too one of these days, right?
Eventually, yes, a children's book.
That's right. Well, I'm sure he's a great delight to you, and we're so happy to have you on. You know, we did a lot of shows about Obamacare, you know, going back to some of the early days of Obamacare, and now I think we're at a point, and exactly when it'll happen, I don't know, but it's going to happen, I believe, this year, where Obamacare will be replaced, repealed first and replaced. And I wanted to hear from you some of your ideas about some of the things maybe you've been writing about or some of the ideas that you have. So why don't we begin there? What are some of the things that you think should be a part of the new? Let's not call it Obamacare. Let's call it whatever we call it, healthcare program. What are some of the things that you think should be in the program?
Well, before I give you my primary idea, I want to mention that the Republican Party, and of course I live close to D.C., so I get all this information firsthand, they're more discussing not repealing Obamacare but reforming it. So they kind of have moved away from that. And, of course, Obamacare is a disaster. It's just Medicare on steroids. There are like 160,000 pages of regulations. The good thing about it this year, which was supposed to be the year when the IRS was compelling people to get insurance, it was reported on Wednesday, I believe, The Hill, that the Internal Revenue Service announced that it will not reject tax forms from individuals who fail to note on their forms that they have fully complied with the individual mandate of the so unaffordable Affordable Care Act. Perhaps that was the most hated aspect of the entire health insurance reform law. But my primary idea is, and we discussed this briefly, is to send back to the 50 states the responsibility of writing their own health care law, and in the form of sending a check this year in 2017 from the federal treasury to each of the 50 states equal to the subsidy paid in 2016 to support the Affordable Care Act. In other words, let each state choose how they would see their citizens' health care managed and covered, And, of course, we could then use some of the ideas coming from the 50 different states, and because Congress cannot possibly write a comprehensive mandate that fits all of our 330 million Americans. And maybe some of the states could, for their few millions, as you mentioned earlier, smaller states that are border each other could get together. But the most important thing is, no matter what they do, the insurance has to be portable across state lines.
So that means that, for example, and I agree with you, that means that if you buy, I don't know, let's say a policy in Wyoming, or if a company, if a person buys a policy in Wyoming and then gets a job in Texas, that that person can bring that policy from Wyoming to Texas. I guess that's what you're saying, right? When you say portable,
right?
You don't lose seniority. I know that's not the right word, but you don't lose benefits. Now, here in Texas, I think we used to have something like that before Obamacare, where if you were, let's say, working for a company, and that company had a group policy, let's say, and you switch jobs to another company and they also had a group policy, that company had to take you completely, you know, even with pre-existing conditions. So that, you know, that can be done, I think, and that may be where, you know, there may be a some kind of a federal regulation or something that says that this has to happen. But I agree with you. I think sending it back to the state would allow something like, and I remember we chatted about this a couple of years ago, something called a health savings account, which they, I believe, are still doing in Indiana, or maybe they can't anymore because of Obamacare. But I think health savings account is the type of thing where the if I understand it correctly, where the patient is actually deciding how to spend the money. So you can shop around or whatever. Don't you think that's a good idea?
Well, it is. First of all, real insurance has to be portable because you are owning it. It's like you owning insurance on your car. And insurance is a privilege, is not a right. People don't understand this economically speaking. They jump to the humanitarian side immediately. But I remember back in 1978 when we had insurance for catastrophic illnesses only, and it was very affordable, and that drove the prices of medical services to levels where people could actually afford to pay cash for the visit. I remember that I was making maybe $800 a month, and the doctor's visit was $15. That was not a whole lot of money to pay for your health, but you used your insurance for catastrophic instances. Now, if you pay cash for your outpatient tests and doctor's visits, and if you remove the outpatient care from the nightmarish, let's say, Medicare regulations, of course the fees for services are going to drop to free market competition level. Of course, we never talk about the pharmaceutical costs, and that's an entirely different ball of wax, so to speak, because the prices of drugs are skyrocketing, and of course the copays are skyrocketing as well. And if you ever travel to Europe, you will see, or anywhere else in the world for that matter, you will see that the prices that Americans pay for their drugs, even those who are insured, actually pay for the cost of drugs for the rest of the world, because they pay a fraction, whereas we pay for the development of these drugs, which I might add cost around $950 million to develop one single drug. So anyway, getting back to competition, we're in a situation where we have a government monopoly market, and they're saying that they will kind of offer affordable rates, but if you look at the costs, instead they have escalated. And if we had invested money in these savings accounts, like you said, wisely, a lifetime, then perhaps they would be more secured in their old age. But if you remember, isn't that what Social Security was supposed to be when we started contributing?
Right.
And eventually they robbed the entire Social Security fund and they moved it in other places. But I do want to mention four things which would or might begin to eliminate this medical quandary that we're in. Well, first of all, before I mention them, I want to say that short of political collapse, no nation has ever unwon government health care. And we have spent so much money already, I don't want to be too optimistic that we would be able to unwind this Obamacare. That's just the reality. And people always cite places in Europe where medical care is so wonderful. Well, in those countries, people pay 50, 60, 70% in taxation, and they do work well if you have the sniffle and simple things. Yes, the visit is free and whatnot. But then if you have something very complicated, they usually deny your care or they postpone it and postpone the test for months and years until hopefully you die. So that's not the situation that I think is ideal because we had very good health care and 80 to 85% of people, of Americans, actually had good medical care with their employers. And therein lies the problem. So what are the four things that I think that might begin to unwind this medical mess? You have to eliminate all government regulations on the sale of health insurance. Why do you mandate coverage? It doesn't say that you have to in the Constitution. It's not your delegated powers. And do not limit sale across state borders. Sell to people of any age and reward people who are responsible and in good health by selling it at lower premiums. Number two, set a time for the phasing out of employer-based health insurance, and that's what I was referring to. Most people have insurance which is offered through their employer. When that employment terminates, they have to go on COBRA, which quadruples the cost sometimes for a month, and I think they can only do it for 6 months. And people are actually divorced from the reality of how much the employer actually pays for your care. I happen to know because I was a college professor and I was studying the booklet every time the insurance premiums went up, so I knew exactly how much it cost. Number three is for anyone who is at or near Medicare age, let's say 50, or people who have uninsurable illnesses, who have no private insurance, then, of course, the government will need to maintain the Medicare system for them until they pass on. So it's sort of like in the case of bankruptcy, you have to deal with some of the costs involved in the bankruptcy process. And number four, Medicaid, it's basically a state-run charity care, and you have to replace it with some kind of personal health care responsibility where the individual can buy whatever type of medical care wishes. And but the Medicaid, and of course you will have to have some kind of local personal charity. But in some states, the Medicaid cost is $70,000 a year per person. And the worst part of it is that they don't really get that good of medical care because not the best doctors accept Medicaid. So they have to go wherever, you know, they can possibly be accepted. So let's give every Medicaid patient a $5,000 health savings account or maybe $8,000. I don't know. It's an arbitrary number. and let it grow tax-free and can be used for all health-related expenses. We used to have that when I was a college professor. What was bad about it is at the end of the year when you did not use it, it went away. But this would not go away. It would grow from year to year. And let's say the government would pay additionally another $5,000 for catastrophic health insurance coverage that would perhaps pay for big-ticket items. And then let the patient prioritize how they're going to use the savings accounts. I bet they won't run to the ER for sniffles every time, because that's what happens now with Medicaid. If they don't want to bother looking for a doctor who would accept Medicaid, they, when somebody does get sick, they run to the emergency room. And that makes the cost skyrocket.
Very
so
good. No, I like
you have to deregulate
the
system.
Right. No, and I agree with you. But what I really like about your idea of going back to the state, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Were you going to say something else?
No, I just I think that's
you have to
deregulate the system so that people can again afford paying for small visits to the doctor,
right,
and even for certain tests.
Right.
And another thing that has happened, there are now groups or pools with different inclinations. For example, I know of one that's a Christian-type insurance where they pay very reasonable premiums. They try to avoid Obamacare, of course. And so they take turns, you know, paying large-ticket items for people who get sick. And, of course, you're going to have something else in place when you have extraordinary cost.
Right.
Once-in-a-lifetime extraordinary cost.
Sure. And what I have, you know, if I could design my ideal program, and it would be run by every state. Now, for example, California has just announced that they're thinking about having their own single pay, which is fine with me. I mean, if they want to do that, that's fine with me. But what I think should happen is that in every state, there ought to be some policy sold, private policies, that are individual policies, much like you buy life insurance or automobile insurance or disability insurance if you're a professional like a doctor or whatever. And then these are your policies. You can take them anywhere you go. If you change jobs, your life insurance policy is not impacted if you change jobs, and your health insurance shouldn't be impacted either. So then you take them from state to state, or let every person, I mean, you can I guess what I'm saying, you can cross state lines and not lose or change jobs, I should say, wherever you change, and not lose your coverage, which is what happens now. A lot of people are in that situation, and I know for a fact a lot of people cannot change jobs because they don't want to give up their health insurance. So it would be sort of run by the states. They would be individual policies or family policies if you have a family. And, yes, you should be able to buy it across state lines so that I can literally shop for it on the computer, much the same way that one would buy anything else. But the problem is, of course, going from where we are right now to where I think we should be, and that's probably going to take a little bit of time. And I think the initial problem for the Republicans in repealing it is going to be the sob stories that we're going to hear about the people who are left without insurance. So they're going to have some kind of a safety net, at least for a while, for people who are currently covered under Obamacare with pre-existing conditions, so that this does not turn into a public relations nightmare. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, of course, and that's understandable. I mean, we're human. We just can't neglect our population and not offer medical care. But there's kind of a difference between, and people conflate this, there's a difference between offering medical care from actually buying the insurance that will pay for this medical care. And since you brought up California, well, they are offering the Healthy California Act to 38 million Californians, and now they want to include their quote-unquote undocumented residents. Well, these are not undocumented. They do have documents. I'm sure they're illegal aliens. And if they want to do that, that's fine. But they have come under attack when you saw what happened in Oroville, California, with that dam, they have the crumbling infrastructure because they squandered money on benefits for illegal aliens and public sector unions at the expense of the infrastructure. And there are actually hospitals that went out of business because they were servicing illegal aliens, you know, coming across the border and having babies and not paying a dime or having a kidney transplant or whatever. And the taxpayers were footing the bill for all of this. And, yes, it's the humane thing to do, but it is the responsibility of their countries to take care of them, medically speaking, not the American taxpayers. And,
right,
and another problem is the
pre-existing
condition.
Right, right. That's right.
Before,
and that's
what
I
lot of
to...
people were denied, or they couldn't afford the insurance because of pre-existing conditions. We have to have a special category where we can't treat them any differently than a person who is healthy.
Right, and you're
but
exactly right. Let
opinion.
Me do this. No, 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 and listen, we love your opinions. That's why we have you on, but I appreciate very much your opinion. I got to take a little break, and then if you can stay with me a few more minutes, I want to come back, and I want to talk a little bit about how we can handle people with pre-existing conditions. So let me just take a little break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Eliana Johnson right after this.
This is Carlos Quedes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
I got to put in a good word here for my friend Carlos, who's a great friend of our show. He and his wife Luisa are from Venezuela, and we got to know each other basically in opposition to Chavez in Venezuela. He's a great musician, has many, many CDs that he's recorded, and he's now playing on Saturday nights at NOLA, which is a place downtown Dallas. We went to see him a couple of weeks ago. It's fantastic. It's a form of Latin jazz that a lot of people are not familiar with, but it's just great. So if you have a chance on Saturday night, if you got nothing to do or you just want to go out with your wife and have a nice dinner and listen to good music, go to NOLA, N-O-L-A, downtown Dallas, and enjoy my good friend Carlos. And I'm going to try to get out there again because I had a great time with Latin jazz. You like Latin jazz, don't you, Dr. Eliana?
Oh, I love it.
Well, you know, we've been using Carlos music now for a couple of years. You've been on the show a couple of times, so I know not just a couple of times, many times, of course, and you've heard his music. Yeah, a few more than a couple, like I don't know how many times, but quite a few times. And so you've enjoyed his music over time, and he's just fantastic. And this little Latin jazz thing is just absolutely, absolutely great. But I wanted to tell you about pre-existing conditions and how I think that we may be able to deal, again, with people who have this problem. And I'm going to borrow an idea that is used in the automobile loan industry. And I understand that it's not exactly like automobile loans, but, you know, in the automobile loans, people who, let's say, have had bad credit problems or whatever, they do have options for them. They're just companies that specialize in that. And even in life insurance, even in the life insurance business, if you have certain medical problems and you cannot be underwritten, let's say, by a regular company, there are companies that specialize in those kinds of things. So there are private sector solutions for people who have medical problems that could be dealt with through individual policies. So we don't have to throw these people out in the streets. Nobody's suggesting that. We just don't think the government is the best way to fix it, Dr. Eliana. You see what I mean? I just don't think that turning this over to the government is the best solution for healthcare. I think that's where you and I agree.
Well, I think I agree with you, and I'll give you a quick example, if I may, how badly the government squanders funds. For example, I don't know if you're familiar with hyperbaric treatments, where a person is put under oxygen treatment to cure certain things, and I believe the federal government, Medicare, Medicaid, approves about 14 different conditions where it does pay for such a treatment. One being, if you're a diabetic and you have a terrible sore that is not healing, you go under hyperbaric oxygenation treatment, and it heals a lot faster, or it heals completely, where before it couldn't. Well, because Medicaid pays for such a treatment, the person doing it bills Medicaid $1,200 per treatment. The treatment lasts about an hour and 15 minutes, give or take. It's the same treatment that they use for people who scuba dive and they have the bends because they surface too quickly. Anyway, if you go and buy the exact same thing without insurance, but not from that facility because they're prohibited by Obamacare to offer to people paying cash out of their own pockets, it only costs between $85 to $200, depending on where the facility is located, what state. So as you can see, if somebody can offer it even for as much as $200 a treatment, but it costs six times as much under the Medicaid guidelines, that's squandering a lot of money and resources. And speaking of squandering, if we took the billions and billions of dollars that we just spent to fix the Obamacare the website that didn't work, the crony website, that would have bought, I think I read somewhere, maybe it was from the Heritage Foundation, insurance for 4 million Americans. So that's... just having a government monopoly over health care is not a good idea, because you have that independent board, that 15 people, bureaucrats, none of them are medical doctors, and they tell doctors what they will or will not pay for their patient. They know what's best for their patient. And if you are the patient in that situation, it's not a good situation. And I'll give you one more example, and that is if you have to have physical therapy with Medicare, for example, they only allow you $1,900 a year. That doesn't go very far if you do need longer physical therapy. And if once that's spent, if you have additional insurance, it will not pay either, because that's the limit and that's the law. So when government makes laws involving and rules involving your health care, they're usually to your detriment.
And because government is always going to be politically motivated, and the private sector is going to be more consumer oriented, and that's where we think, I think you and I agree, that's where the healthcare should be. Let's take it away from government monopolies, and it should always be between the doctor and the patient. That's where I think the focus should be, between the doctor and the patient. And I'll just give you one quick example of something that I've seen too. And thankfully, I haven't had a lot of major medical problems in my life or so far. I've been fortunate, I guess, in that sense. But I remember the story of a man who went in, and the cost was about $15,000 or $20,000, and he wanted to pay for it out of his own pocket. And like everybody at the doctor's office, didn't even know what to do. They didn't even know that you could do that. And he said, "No, I'll just pay it myself." And they didn't even know what to do, because they're so accustomed to processing forms, you know, insurance forms or whatever, that they weren't accustomed. Something else, too, that should happen is that when you go pay for medical care, you should have, you know, the same thing that happens in other purchases. You know, there ought to be finance companies willing to take an application and process your application right there and finance your activities. I think that would lower the cost of insurance a great deal too, you know, but we'll see what happens. But I do want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's always a lot of fun to hear from you. And I hope that this year I hear from you a few more times, because I think this is going to be a hot topic over the next 10 to 12 months, don't you
think? I think so, too, yeah. I totally agree, and thanks for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. I was trying to count how many times we've had you. It's been more than a few. I think it's
I don't know.
I'll have to count them and send you an email and see how many times, but it's been more than a few. But again, thank you so much for your
time. Next time we should talk about the medical care for veterans, how that should be changed.
Yes.
And I've had experience most recently with my husband, who is a veteran.
Well, I hope that we do that, and maybe we should do a show exclusively on that. I would love to hear your experiences, because I'm sure they're very important, and you're always
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you,
have a wonderful evening.
And my pleasure, and you have a wonderful evening, and thank you for your time.
You too. Until next time.
Thank you so much. Until the next time. Dr. Ileana Johnson, I said she's an author, she is a blogger, and she's an economist, and we just love chatting with her. She always has a lot of good things to say. You know, one thing I love about her, she really does her preparation well, and whenever I invite her on the show, you could tell just by listening to her that she really studies this and really comes very well prepared for the interview. It's something that I think I enjoy a lot, and I know the listeners do as well. But again, as I said before, I think the way to fix healthcare, and this is not going to happen overnight, but if we could gradually do this over time, the way to do it is to send it back to the states with a few regulations, portability, and so on, and let the states figure this out. I think what you will have is a lot of solutions that the states will come up with that other states will learn from. A lot of different experiments will come from this, and I think at the end of the day, I think we'll have a better product for consumers. We're still going to have a human quality to it. We're still going to take care of the people with pre-existing conditions and the people who have problems. Nobody's going to be denied insurance because you have a pre-existing condition or whatever. And for people who cannot pay, people who may be in a situation where they cannot pay for whatever reason, because they lost their jobs, or whatever reason, there's always going to be a subsidy for those people. I'm pretty sure that that's the way our society is. And I think our society is based on good people that want to take care of others. And I have no doubt that we would take care of those people who need the health insurance that they cannot afford. But what we have right now, this government intervention known as Obamacare, has turned out to be a disaster. And the sooner we cut this off and move on to a new chapter, I think the better it's going to be for everybody, absolutely everybody. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.